This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2. We're streaming online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Among the top 10 sites on the World Wide Web is Wikipedia. Created in 2001, it now contains 2 million individual articles, and it continues to grow. It's a work in progress. Today, we'll go inside with Wikipedia administrator Andrew Lee. An administrator is described as a trusted user who is granted access to technical features. He's also the host of the weekly Wikipedia podcast. Lee, a commentator on new media, is the author of The Wikipedia Revolution, How a Bunch of Nobodies Created the World's Greatest Encyclopedia. Those nobodies, they are hundreds of thousands of volunteer contributors. They include academic scholars and middle school students. Is it the world's greatest encyclopedia? It is used by many, turning up at the top or near the top of many a Google search. It also has its critics. Wikipedia outlines points of criticism in a 28-page long Wikipedia article. The strength and weakness of Wikipedia may be that anyone can edit. Listeners, join the discussion with your questions and comments. I look forward to your phone calls. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. WILL. Let me tell you a little bit more about our guest. Andrew Lee is an academic, or was an academic, in new media and journalism for 10 years at Columbia University. He's contributed commentary on new media, technology, and journalism for CNN, MSNBC, and NPR. You'll find him online at www.andrewlee.com. His name is spelled L-I-H. You may also want to check out the book's website, www.wikipediarevolution.com. The book, The Wikipedia Revolution, is published by Hyperion. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Andrew Lee, hello, how are you?
Hi, Celeste, good to be with you.
It must be very early there in Beijing.
That's right. Well, it's about 2 a.m. here in Beijing, but I don't mind. I'm used to doing this on the radio at this early in the morning.
Okay. Well, it's wonderful to have you as our guest. Thank you so much. Well, tell us about the Wikipedians. How big is this community?
Well, it's hard to count, actually. It's, you know, at this point, Wikipedia has over 250 different language editions. Certainly the one that your listeners are probably the most familiar with is the one in English. And the English language Wikipedia right now stands at over 2.8 million find through Google or from searching through the site. But the estimates are anywhere from about, you know, 10,000 or so regular editors of Wikipedia are editing, deleting, maintaining the pages of Wikipedia. And that kind of comes and goes month to month. But it's, we're talking about tens of thousands of users on a regular basis go to Wikipedia to help edit its pages.
Yeah. You've been to a number of get-togethers of Wikipedians, London, Beijing, Germany, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Boston, Taiwan. What are these get-togethers like?
It's a good question. One of the first get-togethers was in the United Kingdom in London, and that was actually one of the I happened to be there the first time that Jimmy Wales, one of the founders of Wikipedia, was also at that gathering, very face-to-face meetings of Wikipedians. And, you know, they tend to look a little bit like the early demographic of the Internet. So, you know, fairly technical in terms of folks who know kind of the technical in and outs of Wikipedia and Internet technology. They tend to be male-oriented or male-dominated. The latest numbers looking at Wikipedia's editors show that it's still about 75% male, 25% female. So that's a little bit like the early days of the Internet, which tend to be dominated by the engineers or the technical folks. Over time, as the Wikipedia editing population looks more and more like the average internet population, and that's certainly probably going to even out over the long run. But the gatherings tend to be folks who are interested in knowledge, interested in the academic pursuit of building, you know, the world's largest reference work, and people who care about quality, people who care about the scholarship inside Wikipedia, even though the process of creating it seems less than academic. It's actually quite a unstructured way of doing things, but surprisingly, it's come up with some pretty accurate information over time.
Hmm. Now, according to the article on criticism of Wikipedia, in Wikipedia, a former editor-in-chief of the Encyclopedia Britannica, Robert McHenry, says, Wikipedia, and I'm quoting here from the article, errs in billing itself as an encyclopedia because the word implies a level of authority and accountability that he believes cannot be possessed by an openly editable reference. How do Wikipedia's champions respond to that criticism?
Right. I think, I respect Robert McHenry, but I almost think like he's working from the wrong end of the definition, right? So he's probably working off a very traditional definition of what encyclopedia is and says, well, since we have as X, Wikipedia isn't produced using a process that has created X in the past, therefore it's not an encyclopedia. Even though every day millions and millions and millions of people run into Wikipedia's pages and contents through Google and say, you know, from looking at the content, this functions and looks like and serves me as an encyclopedia and is immensely useful. So I think his argument comes a lot from just arguing definitions rather than the real empirical evidence in front of people's eyes is that Wikipedia has been immensely useful to folks, even though, as we mentioned before, the process seems quite unfamiliar and rather chaotic on first glance. And part of the book was to, well, part of the reason why I wrote the book is to explain to folks that the kind of not unorganized per se, but the lack of a traditional organization for creating Wikipedia shouldn't throw you off too much, because the evidence is that the content is immensely useful for folks. And instead of turning your back on Wikipedia, saying it can never be good, saying instead, we know it's good. We know that people flock to it, and we know that people find it useful. And because of that, we should actually examine it even further to see what we can learn from it. And you know, Wikipedia is one of the crowning achievements of the kind of social media revolution, right? The Web 2.0 crowdsourcing revolution, as one of the most interesting projects to study, so that we can find out more about how crowds of folks network together through the internet create quality work.
Yeah, at the close of your first chapter, you mentioned some of the new terms being used in relation to how works of knowledge are being produced today: crowdsourcing, peer production, and open source intelligence. Where are we in terms of making our way through this landscape?
What I think was so fascinating about looking through the history of reference works, whether you're talking about the French Encyclopedia, which was, you know, done in the 1700s, you know, during the during Revolutionary France, or you're talking about the creation of the Oxford English Dictionary, you realize that Wikipedia's model, even though we see it as quite strange and unfamiliar in allowing anyone on the internet to contribute to it, is actually an old formula. So if you look at how the Oxford English Dictionary was created, it actually was done by user contributions. And there's a whole part of one chapter in my book where it talks about just simply the history of the Oxford English Dictionary, and it looks a lot like Wikipedia in terms of one group of folks putting out a public call for people to catalog words that they find in literature and things that they read and send in slips of paper to a central place where they put them into and finally compile the Oxford English Dictionary. So a lot of listeners out there might have heard of a book called Professor and the Madman by Simon Winchester. And this tells a story of, you know, how contributions to the Oxford English Dictionary came from so many different places, including folks from a lunatic asylum. So we tend to think of Wikipedia as being, oh, why should we trust these random folks on the internet? Well, we have very, very respected reference works that were contributed by folks that we didn't know much about at the time. So we kind of see that, you know, past is prologue, in that Wikipedia has a way of aggregating contributions from lots of different folks. But this is not a new idea. This has actually happened over time in many, many projects.
Yeah. The book's afterword was written by the Wiki community. How do the Wikipedians envision the future?
It's a good question. Right now, the community, certainly 2.8 million articles is an incredible accomplishment in English Wikipedia. And the other languages are at different stages of moving towards that, you know, multi-million article goal. And the last chapter, I asked the community to come in, and I think this is an example of where, you know, it would be kind of silly to have the last chapter of my book, you know, be frozen. And instead, I invited the community of folks to help write it and evolve it after the book was done. And some of the fact that, you know, as we reach 3 million articles in the English Wikipedia, you don't like to say that human knowledge is finite and you can finish writing about human knowledge. But a lot of the low-hanging fruit has been picked. You know, at 2.8 million articles, most of the articles about basic human knowledge have been written. The next 2 million or so articles that you might put into Wikipedia will be much more detailed and much more specific about different parts of the taxonomy of human knowledge. Or they might be additions based on the news or current events. But most of what we consider, you know, basic human knowledge has been written about in Wikipedia. So what does this mean for the future?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of community will come around to write the next 2 million articles? That means you either need specialists or people who are very, very knowledgeable in these, you know, very vertical areas of human knowledge, or you might need news junkies and people who are simply maintaining articles in Wikipedia with additions of new people and phenomena that happen in the news, or to update articles. But it's a very different phase that you're in right now with Wikipedia. It's kind of past the revolutionary phase and into more the maintenance phase. So just like the old saying about politics and revolution, you know, revolutionaries don't necessarily make the best rulers or the best long-term maintainers of government. That might be the same thing for Wikipedia. You know, the people who are there at the revolution are the people for maintaining Wikipedia long-term.
Well, that makes me think of entrepreneurs, because the same is said of entrepreneurs, and maybe we could talk here about Jimmy Wales.
Right.
He wrote the book's foreword. What was his role in the creation of Wikipedia, and what is his role today?
Yeah, the early days of Wikipedia actually were probably more dominated by the original editor-in-chief of the original project. So just as a quick summary for the listeners out there, Wikipedia had a curious beginning, because it actually started out in 2001, but it was preceded by a very conventional encyclopedia project that was started by Jimmy Wales and Larry Sanger. And it was started as a .com, and it was called Wikipedia in 2000. And the idea that Jimmy Wales had at his company, Bomas.com, was to create a for-profit, ad-supported encyclopedia called Wikipedia, and he hired a fellow that he knew from the mailing lists on the internet called Larry Sanger, who was a PhD student in philosophy. And the idea was that you would create an encyclopedia to rival Encarta and Britannica, the two best known at the time, and you would have a very rigorous 7-step process. You would have PhDs, you would have academics volunteer to write this, and way better at the time. Of course, if you're writing an encyclopedia, you would need to have people with pedigrees, and you would need to have a very rigorous process. So you need to have an editor-in-chief and sub-editors and copy editors and review editors and all these things. Well, the problem was, over 1 year, from 2000 to 2001, with this rigorous process and all these requirements, they came up with a grand total of 12 articles. So they saw that this was certainly not going to scale up. 1 year, 12 articles, oh boy, you know, this is not really going to be sustainable long term. So what they did in 2001, in January, they knew that they had to make a change. And what they did was they looked at the computer science world, and they saw that this piece of software called a wiki was being used to gather contributions from people in the computer science world or sites that concentrated on computer programming. And they said, well, why don't we try this software for to at least get the general public to contribute the basic information for articles, and then we'll have the PhDs and the editors come through and polish them. But at least we can use this wiki software to gather contributions from anyone on the Internet. So after they put the wiki software up in January 15th, 2001, in a few weeks, they had more production than an entire year in the past. They suddenly saw people flocking to this site, which at the time was, you know, wikipedia.com, and contribute all this information. And they said, this is amazing. You know, we've had many folks who are used to sharing and contributing computer code and technical information, suddenly contributing to this encyclopedia project. So much so that they didn't even need that rigorous seven-step process anymore. They first thought that you could use wikis to gather information, then to polish it later on with this process. They didn't even need that. They saw this community online collaborating to create quality information just by self-organizing, to the point where the Newpedia project was canceled and Wikipedia itself became the main project. So in the early days, it was both Larry Sanger and Jimmy Wales who were instrumental for the early days of Wikipedia, and that's why they're often called the co-founders of Wikipedia. And Larry Sanger came up with a lot of the policies that we know of in Wikipedia now that make it so famous. So one of the policies that Wikipedia has pioneered is called the neutral point of view. When you have this many folks coming online to contribute together, you need something that makes what one of the founders called a co-labor instead of anti-labor. You need something to bind folks together to work towards creating one article rather than splintering their efforts across different areas. So the idea of writing one article and one article only about a topic and all having to contribute using a neutral point of view, a fairly representing all sides of an argument or of an issue, was a real amazing thing to have inside the community to bind folks. That was kind of the initial 2001 conception of how this encyclopedia project could actually get folks to work together. And over time, Jimmy Wales has become, you know, what has often been called on the Internet as a benevolent dictator. Mm-hmm. Right? He is kind of like the authority of last resort. The community tries to do everything by consensus and tries to solve, you know, 99.8% of the problems on their own. But if there are some problem cases that really can't be done well or it's a deadlock, then Jimmy Wales will often step in at the last moment to rule on things. But I think his more humble style and staying in the background and stepping in only when necessary has been quite useful in the project. And it's been kind of a hallmark of many of these online projects is to have a leader when necessary, but usually in the background.
Yeah. In the foreword, Wales mentions Ward Cunningham as the inventor of the wiki concept. What does wiki mean and where did that word come from?
Yeah, that's a good question. So Ward Cunningham in 1995, he was a computer programmer who was, you know, interested in how people share and contribute and teach each other their techniques, their metaphors, their experiences online. So he had been on vacation or in a honeymoon with his wife in Hawaii. And for some of the listeners out there who've been to Hawaii, you might know that the shuttle bus terminals at the Hawaii airport are called the WikiWiki buses. I think actually by this point they've discontinued them or in the process of discontinuing them for another type of transport. But it was called the WikiWiki, which in the Hawaiian language, wiki means fast, and wiki means really fast or quick. So he remembered that word from his honeymoon, and when he was trying to name his software, which he wanted to be quick for people to edit and to contribute information, you know, to basically have a web page that's quickly editable so that people could write and teach each other things online, he remembered his trip from Hawaii and called his software the WikiWiki Web. Mm. And that's where we now have the word wiki to describe any kind of software on the Internet that allows for people to quickly edit a web page, which actually is one of the original ideas of the World Wide Web. And most people don't know this, but the World Wide Web, as created by Tim Berners-Lee, who is the, you know, the Swiss, one of the researcher at the Swiss CERN lab, he originally meant for the Internet, Internet's World Wide Web, to be read and write. But when we first got the Internet, the World Wide Web in the 90s, we really saw the browsing and the reading function, we really didn't have the writing function of the web. And so the wiki actually enabled this to happen in a way that made it easy for people to write information onto a website.
Yeah. Wales calls Wikipedia not a technological innovation, but a social innovation. When did that eureka moment come to folks and, you know, say, we've got something here. This is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about Wikipedia when it was launched in 2001 is the fact that all the technology needed to create that system, either the hardware, the database, you know, where all the pages and entries were stored, or the software that runs it, is actually quite old. Remember, I mentioned it was 1995 that the software was created. So it was only until 2001, you know, for 6 years, you didn't have any kind of, you know, online reference work as significant as Wikipedia that was edited by a group online. So that's why I think that saying, you know, it's not so much technical innovation as social innovation is really quite true. There's nothing that prevented the idea of a group-edited encyclopedia to happen in 2001. There was, you know, it could have happened in the 90s or late 90s. The difference is we really didn't have the, you know, mentality or the structures around to believe that a group-edited online reference was possible. So, you know, the funny thing is technology moves very, very fast, but the ability for humans to understand the implications of technology moves quite slowly.
On the other,
you know, all the things that we do.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We're talking across a very long distance, so we're having to kind of wait a little bit for one another. So I hope the audience will bear with us. But you mentioned technology moving very quickly, but you also have come up with a pretty neat metaphor for for us to catch up, and that is the piranha effect. If I've not explained that very well, maybe you could fill us in here on the piranha effect. What is that, and how does it work?
Right. So the piranha effect is a label that the French Wikipedians or the Wikipedia editors in the French edition have come up with. And it's their description of how, you know, one person's work inspires work by other people, and that in turn inspires work by other folks as well. So the idea is that almost like piranhas, you know, which are very small fish but very sharp teeth, can actually, you know, make short work of a cow or a side of beef, because each of these individual fish that on their own probably could not devour an entire beast, but individually, in different parts, inspired by the work of other folks, can actually accomplish a large task. That's pretty much what happens in Wikipedia. So, you know, one person in one corner of Wikipedia creating an article as kind of a seed crystal might actually inspire someone else to add information to that article, but might inspire a third person to add a map or an illustration to an article, and it might inspire someone else to look up more information, expand an article. So this is typically what you see, at least in the early days of Wikipedia, that you would have this life cycle of creating an article, adding to an article, enhancing an article, linking in that article to other articles, and embellishing and building up all the aspects of an article based on the norms in the community. Mm. And so this is what you kind of see as the piranha effect, that the efforts of independent actors in Wikipedia inspired by the work of others has been the bedrock of why we have so many good and lasting articles in Wikipedia.
This is The Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is Andrew Lee. He's a wiki administrator, and he is also the host of the weekly Wikipedia podcast. He's a commentator on new media. He's the author of The Wikipedia Revolution, How a Bunch of Nobodies Created the World's Greatest Encyclopedia. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. As you note, Andrew Lee, there are enormous questions about the reliability of Wikipedia. Within the Wikipedia community, how are questions of reliability addressed?
Yes, over time, you know, the community has responded in different ways, and as Wikipedia has evolved, there have been different standards within the community. So when Wikipedia started in 2001, it was just an accomplishment to even have an article about a given subject. So it was, you know, when you're writing the article about cat, dog, ball, you know, United States, Russia, China, there was not much debate when you wrote the first article about cat saying it's a four-legged mammal. You didn't have people coming out and saying, well, we don't know that it's four-legged. You need to have a reference. No, it was pretty easy to write the basic articles very quickly, very early on in Wikipedia's history. But then as you start to add more information saying, you know, a cat is, you know, is indigenous to these areas and, you know, cats come in these sizes, then people say, well, how do we know this? Is that verifiable? Is that really true? And then that's where people started upping the standard in terms of what needs to be referenced, what needs to be verified, what are reliable sources to depend on? Do you rely on, you know, certain newspapers, certain magazines, certain reference works? So over time, that standard has changed as the information in Wikipedia has become more detailed, more extensive, more comprehensive. And over time, there are now policies within Wikipedia like verifiability. You know, do not add facts or assertions that are not backed up by verifiable sources. Another one that has been employed recently is what they call the biography of living persons. If you're writing about living people, you need to be very careful about what you write because there's libel laws, but there's also a real impact on the lives of individuals if you get things wrong. So it is quite fascinating to see, since when I joined in 2003, as being, you know, very much in a growth mode. Let's get articles about everything under the sky. You know, we're on a mission here to catalog, you know, the sum of all human knowledge. To the norms that we have since 2007 to 2009, which emphasize a lot more reliability, referencing, and all these things. So I just looked the other day at the article about the swine flu outbreak that everyone is concerned about right now. And in the second day of the crisis, you had a very extensive article about swine flu, news reports and reports from Mexico to Europe to Asia. And at the bottom of this article, if you look at the references, there are 122 references cited in this article only after 2 days. And that's such a dramatic change from the early days of Wikipedia, where people were just putting information in because it was common knowledge. Now, you know, no fact is allowed in a lot of these articles unless it is directly pointing to a new source or a reliable source. And that's why you look at articles like Barack Obama or Iraq War, and you see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of references like footnotes at the bottom of these articles because the standard is so high now. And because of that, I think the reliability of Wikipedia has increased as a result, and they're working on even more solutions to up the quality inside Wikipedia.
Yeah. Now, as Wikipedia now has like 2.8 million articles, that's huge. It's mind-boggling. Now, you've got all that material. What's the process for cautioning readers that there's a dispute, that an article needs work or is to be treated skeptically?
Right. And over time, the standards within Wikipedia have changed as well for labeling things as accurate or inaccurate or things that are disputed. So there, on a very broad level, there are, you know, a number of articles in Wikipedia featured, which means that people have checked them for accuracy, writing style, completeness, you know, for many different types of criteria, and they've been by committee passed through what they call the featured article process. And if it reaches what they call featured article status, those are the types of articles you see on the front page of Wikipedia. If you go to the en.wikipedia.org, which is the front page of the English language edition, you will see a different featured article each day. And those are articles that have passed this test. And through that same process, you have people who rate articles, you know, anywhere from A, B, C, to, you know, at least try to benchmark articles against some kind of standard that the community has created, and to encourage increasing the quality of those, and even, you know, lower on the scale, you have people who can, or anyone can, slap at the top of an article a, you know, this article's neutrality is disputed, or, you know, this article needs work, or the, you know, this one needs more verifiable sources because for an article of a certain length, it doesn't quite have as many references as needed. So these are kind of new norms that the community has come up with to actually put on, you know, what you might consider warning labels or caution labels at the top of articles so that people know more about the provenance and the development cycle of certain articles. And even though this may look a little bit ugly when people encounter these articles, it's at least a good warning sign. It's telling people, you know what, I know you're used to looking at an encyclopedia and seeing a, you know, an evenness of quality across the articles, but in Wikipedia, it's much more bumpy. It's much more more of a rough landscape. And I think this does a pretty good job to address what Robert McHenry criticized before that we talked about, is that instead of walking into Wikipedia with the expectation that everything has been quality checked to a certain authority level, Wikipedia has never made that claim, and instead of, you know, trying to live up to that claim all across the board, they will have individual articles flagged for different things that are good and things that are bad. And I think that is something that a lot of people have appreciated over the years, is that the Wikipedia community has honestly tried to label articles they consider good and bad within the community.
Andrew Lee, author of The Wikipedia Revolution, is our guest this afternoon here on The Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, if you'd like to join us, give us a call, 333-9455, or toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener now in Paw Paw, Illinois, line 4. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good subject. I am in the process of trying to actually print up I'm a contractor, and I'm doing seminars on contractor fraud. And there's a lot of good information out there. And usually when I write it down, I don't really write it down. I kind of copy what's written on the whatever paper I get it from and the people I get it from, and let people know ahead of time, you know, when I bring it in there, this is from so-and-so from X amount of paper. And I was wondering, I'm in a process of trying to put up a website, and can I do the same thing on a website as long as I credit to the guy, the people writing it in the paper or wherever I get it? Is that good? Or because I'm really you know, worried about infringing, like you say, you know, copyright stuff, and I don't know if that is, am I doing the proper way or what? It's confusing trying to set your website up.
No, it's an interesting thing that most people may not know about Wikipedia is that anything that anyone writes in Wikipedia, you have to agree to freely license it. And the license that they use in Wikipedia is what they call the free documentation license. And this is probably one of the main reasons why Wikipedia has become so popular and has been able to gather so many writers and contributors, is the fact that once you contribute content to Wikipedia, anyone can copy and reproduce what is in Wikipedia afterwards. And that's been a huge thing. It's not one company that owns the content. It's not making one person rich. It is actually, you know, free content that anyone can copy and reproduce as long as you, you know, let anyone else also copy and reproduce it. And I think that is as big a breakthrough as anything about Wikipedia, is the open source, free culture type product to the encyclopedia area. That's something that they've been used to for a long time in the software world with open source software, and now you have an open source encyclopedia. And absolutely, go ahead and copy Wikipedia's articles and put them in your website and do what you like with them. That's one of the original ideas of Wikipedia, is to give everyone the sum of all human knowledge for free.
That's what I usually do, and I try to give credit to as credit's due. But I go a step further as I do the research on it, you know, to make sure these guys are legitimate too, because I've come across a lot of articles there's a lot of misinformation out there. And, I mean, I printed something up once in a flyer that I did, and I went and double-checked and triple-checked, and I found out later on the guy that was doing all this basically not telling the truth, and it was like half a lie. And you know, it's hard to keep on top of things because there's so many different people out there doing so many different ways of the same article. So I'm trying not to copy any. That's the hardest part to me, is not trying to duplicate somebody. You know, it's confusing. You know, I mean, the internet just boggles my mind. I'm still learning it. I actually need to go to classes for this stuff because I could spend hours out there trying to do stuff. But anyway, thank you. Right. Great subject.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions, comments are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. When did Wikipedia go international, and how many foreign language versions are there now?
Wikipedia went international fairly early, mainly because, you know, obviously it started in the English language because the .com company that started was U.S.-based. But a lot of the online culture, or the online, you know, hacker culture that started Wikipedia was actually, you know, technical folks based in Germany. So the German Wikipedia started fairly quickly after that. In fact, there were German articles kind of in the English Wikipedia at the very beginning and before they split it out into German and English editions. And then obviously the countries or the languages for which there's a large internet population started very soon afterwards. French, Spanish, even Chinese, quite quickly after that. So right now, the number of languages for which there's a Wikipedia edition is over 250, although certainly most of those 250 don't have as substantial a number of articles as English language Wikipedia. But if you're talking about the number of languages for which there's a significant amount, like 10,000 articles or more, you're still talking about, 50 to 80 languages. That's huge. That's still a large number. And for a lot of these, really not economically feasible for a for-profit company to create a comprehensive encyclopedia for those languages. So while we debate in the English language world whether one should use Wikipedia versus Britannica versus Encarta, or any other book like World Book Encyclopedia, for many of the languages on that list of Wikipedia editions, the Wikipedia edition is by far the largest and sometimes the only encyclopedia in those languages. So, in fact, the measurable impact of Wikipedia in these other languages is actually a lot more interesting than the case of English language Wikipedia. You know, we have lots of alternatives for Wikipedia in English, but for many of these other languages, you don't. And it's quite interesting seeing the impact on the economics, even in the English language. Just a few weeks ago, Microsoft announced that they will be shutting down their Encarta encyclopedia, largely because Wikipedia has become so dominant and such a large force that it just doesn't make any sense for Encarta to continue for Microsoft. The latest numbers from Hitwise, the company that tracks these statistics, show that Microsoft and Britannica, compared to Wikipedia, have only 3% of the market. That's pretty astounding. That means that 97% of all the traffic to online encyclopedias is to Wikipedia. So that's a pretty sobering statistic for to stare at every day. And that's probably why they shut down the Encarta encyclopedia, knowing that they were never going to get significant traffic and revenue through that avenue.
We've got a couple of other callers now waiting to talk with us, so let's go and take a call from a listener now in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I would like to know what process Wikipedia uses if all the many corporate copywriters out there that remove negative articles, not negative, but critical articles of whatever their product or process is. How does Wikipedia kind of deal with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And going forward, that's certainly going to be one of the most critical things that the Wikipedia community has to patrol and to combat. It already is a big problem. You have a lot of, less than noble companies going in there trying to influence the articles about them. And this is, you know, quite a bad phenomenon of spamming, of whitewashing articles. And, you know, any PR company out there that is looking after their client is likely looking at Wikipedia's articles about them. Tom Friedman, in his book, The World is Flat, talked about how, you know, now companies like IBM have PR or public relations folks constantly monitoring the IBM article in Wikipedia, because they realize that anyone under the age of 30 is probably going to visit Wikipedia article on IBM before they go to IBM.com, and that Wikipedia is that influential in terms of molding people's opinions about companies, that it is certainly in the priority of public relations companies to monitor these articles about their clients. And it's a tough thing to do. You know, with 2.8 million articles, you need a pretty active community to patrol all these articles that are about companies, about scandals, about crises. And there's increasing evidence that it's maybe too big a task simply for the community to keep up with. And they've been trying to employ other methods like software systems to try to keep a lid on spamming and these other types of undue influences on articles.
Yeah, well, the next time I read an article about AIG, I guess I'll read it with a grain of salt then.
Right.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Also, public figures have got a challenge there as well.
There was a recent problem with finding out that there's been a lot of editing from Internet addresses from government agencies and Congress about articles about certain politicians or rival politicians, as it might be. And this is not unique to the U.S. It's been happening from folks around the world about politicians. So it is a real problem.
Let's take another call. A listener in Charleston, line 4. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Nice program. I was doing some research on my last name, which is an ancient dynasty in India. As a matter of fact, some people say it is the first royal dynasty of India, Nanda dynasty. And it was about the time of Alexander the Great. They were ruling the northwestern part of India. And I was kind of interested who started that dynasty. I read two articles on that. One said it was founded by one of the lowest caste in India, the Shudras. And of course, the ruling class is always known as the Kshatriyas. And then later on, there was an article which said, no, it was founded by a Kshatriya. Now, whom to believe? And if there is a contradiction, is there a way somebody can refer to authorities and they can resolve who started the dynasty?
Yeah, so that's a pretty classic case in Wikipedia of where you might use what they call the talk page. So a lot of the users of Wikipedia, or at least the readers of Wikipedia, may not see this, but associated with every article in Wikipedia is a discussion area or a discussion page. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the flip side of each article is a whole discussion area. And usually these kind of conflicts you can bring up on the discussion pages and say, hey, there's an inherent contradiction in this article historically or fact-wise, and we need to resolve it. And you can list kind of the two conflicting facts and ask for people's opinions and help on trying to form consensus. It may be a simple a problem of, you know, we know what the real answer is. It just so happens there's just one little problem sentence at the bottom. Or there may be a full-blown dispute and you need, you know, 5, 10, 15 people to come in and try to, you know, dissect it and to look up references in other works and to figure it out. But typically these types of debates happen on what they call the talk or discussion pages. And usually, and hopefully, they work out pretty well in the end.
Thank you very much. I think that's what I'll do.
Yeah. I would suggest putting that on the discussion page and seeing what people think.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Sure. We're here at the end of the time we have together, Andrew Lee. And before we go, I want to ask you, what does Wikipedia in China look like? And are there differences in how Wikipedia looks or feels country to country?
Oh, yeah. If we had more time, we could definitely talk a long time about that. But in China, fortunately now, in China, Wikipedia is not blocked. Now, for the better part of 2 years, Wikipedia was pretty much inaccessible in China. As most listeners out there know, that China has a pretty sophisticated internet blocking system referred to as the Great Firewall of China. So even though I was based in China, most of the time I was writing this book, it was not about China. It was about, you know, the greater Wikipedia community. You know, Wikipedia was technically blocked in China. Now, it's pretty easy to get around this block if you're technically inclined. But right before the Olympics, China lifted a lot of the blocks on internet sites, and they've stayed unblocked since the Olympics. And that's been a good development. That means that right now in China, all the Wikipedia editions, English, Chinese, or any other language, is not blocked, and the full range of Wikipedia articles are accessible to readers in China. And there certainly are differences across languages. It is not simply the same article in English translated to French, Spanish, German, Japanese. Pretty much the article collection and the articles themselves take on a lot of the kind of cultural character of those language groups that have written that article. And if we had more time, we could probably talk more about those differences across those languages.
So many fascinating aspects of the story. Well, Andrew Lee, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Sure. And if people pick up the book, they can read more about those language differences there, which I spent a whole chapter on.
Very good. And there's a lot more in the book, and we'll leave it there. Andrew Lee has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He spells his last name L-I-H, and you'll find him online at andrewlee.com. You can check out the book's website as well, www.wikipediarevolution.com. His book, The Wikipedia Revolution, How a Bunch of Nobodies Created the World's Greatest Encyclopedia, is published by Hyperion.